Welcome to this episode of Wildcast. I'm your host, Matt Blymeyer. Our guest today is a Sunbury native, a graduate of Penn College, started his soccer career as the boys coach at Loyal Sock, moved on to be an assistant women's coach at Lycoming College, and just finished up his third year as the head coach of Penn College women's soccer team. Please welcome Ian Scheller. Ian, good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
Well, let's get started. Tell us what inspired you to be a coach. I feel like knowing you from when you were a student here, you saw the game differently and you really loved to chalk talk when you were in college. Where did that come from? And is there an inspiration for you that pushed you, not pushed you, I guess guided you into becoming a soccer coach?
Well, I think that especially with coaching is a very unique career path. And it's because a lot of times it's an extension of the game, right? And because you can only play for so long. I loved playing. I loved my playing career. But the most important thing to me when I was playing was kind of the X's and O's. I'm kind of a soccer nerd. A lot of what I do in my free time is I watch a lot of soccer games, professional. I watch other people's college games. Like it is a huge part of my life. It's always been a big part of my life. It's been a way that I've created a lot of friendships, and it's just a very unique environment when you're a part of a team. And as a coach, we get a lot of the similar aspects of that because we culture build, we team build, we do the different things. We spend a lot of time in the familial and creating a familial environment. And it's something that I loved as a player and when I was a captain of the team here at Penn College. And it's something I tried to carry forward as a coach. It probably is my favorite part of the game. The X's and O's are great and all that different stuff. But for me, it's having the ability to build something with a group of people and having everyone work toward a common goal is something that's really rewarding. The X's and O's, going to practice every single day, it's fun because you get to kind of test your knowledge. You get to test your knowledge against other coaches. The tactical side, that's really fun. That's what gets my competitive juices flowing. But the big thing for me is I've been very lucky to be around a lot of great players and work under and play for a lot of very good coaches. And it's something that I wanted to carry on. You kind of take instances you have from your high school where I played for a man named John Steese, and him and I are still really good friends. He calls me once a week and we talk about his teams. We talk about my teams. He's got a relationship with my girls from working in my academy. And it's those bonds that is the one thing that when you leave sport is the hardest thing to replicate and hardest thing to replace. But as a coach, understanding the X's and O's gave me an avenue to move forward and have that social aspect and carry that forward and still feed my competitive juices, but also do the thing I want to do, and that's team build.
Tell us about your journey to becoming the head coach at Penn College. It started as the boy coach at Loyal Sock. From there, you transitioned to assistant coach at Lycoming, and then eventually you came here. Walk us through that. What was that? Maybe a 4 or 5 year process, if I remember correctly.
So I think, and if we want to go back even further than that, in 2000 and probably 2015, I started a job called Soccer Shots. It's a job where I used to go to local daycares and go to local facilities and work with kids that were ages 2 to ages like 8 or 9. And that was kind of my first coaching job. And I did that while I was a player here at Penn College. As I began to find out that it was potentially an option to make coaching a career, I started to work towards what would be the next best step for me. As soon as I graduated here, I was made the interim middle school boys coach at Loyal Sock. It was my first job, so they wanted to see if I could command a team, do the different stuff like that. So I worked as the middle school boys coach for a spring. I got great responses from the parents and different things. So they offered me the high school job that coming fall. When I got there, it was a big thing for me that it was the team that they had a bit of a down year the year before. They only had like 6 wins. And I just said, hey, let's just work for progress. Let's work for progress. Let's look to make this team. My first year, we won 15 games. I was there for 2 years before inevitably leaving to go full-time as the assistant, sorry, not full-time, but to spend my majority of my time at Lycoming, doing the recruiting stuff, all the different things. I was made the top assistant. From there, we had COVID, and that gave us a weird down period where I kind of missed the juices of coaching 2 teams at the same time, where I was the head coach of Loyal Sock Boys and also working at Lycoming concurrently. So a year after that, after being promoted to the Lycoming College's top assistant, I went back to the Loyal Sock Boys for a second time to finish out, I guess, what I would call my 4-year process. It was my senior boys that I picked up when they were in 8th grade. I came back to coach them for a year just to see them out because they were in need of a coach again. At that point, I stepped down from that position, finished at Lyco when the job here opened up, and decided it was time for me to take a step into the college game where I could have my own team. Kenny always said, Kenny Fernand is my mentor, and he was someone who I worked with at Lycoming College. And he always said that from the minute I got there, I was ready to be a head coach. But my resume didn't say that. I was young. I needed to learn. I needed to figure out exactly what to do, build my own coaching philosophies, my style of coaching, and kind of discover myself, which was nice because coaching middle school boys, coaching high school boys, coaching youth soccer, running my own academy, camps, all these different things allowed me to kind of make an identity for myself as a coach. And then all of those experiences allowed me to carry that into the job here that I have now. So it was a longer journey, but where I say my big starting point was that first head coaching job of the middle school team, learning how to understand booking buses, doing the different stuff. It was a very, very instrumental part of that because it kind of showed me, hey, you're an adult now. You got 30 kids that you have to watch over and do these different things. And that's kind of where it all started.
What about the position here intrigued you? Did it help that you are a graduate? Did it hurt that you're a graduate? What about this position intrigued you and made you apply for it?
I think for me, a big thing was obviously finding a coaching position was paramount because I'd been an assistant for at that time 4 years and I had had some experience as a head coach at Loyal Sock and I've worked as a soccer trainer, different stuff. So I had a lot of different experiences. And for me, being an alum was a cool thing because I've seen where it was in the past and we recently just had our alumni game and meeting with some of the alum and talking about things in the past when I was here as a player and understanding the history of where the women's program was. It was nice to have that familiarity and knowing that, hey, I think there's a little bit of an upside here. I think this program can go further. I think there are things that my coaching style plus having my familiarity with the campus here, I think those things could benefit me on the recruiting trail. And one thing that always comes through, and a lot of recruits and their parents will mention this as a big thing, is my passion for the school is huge. And I tried to stay up to date with the things that were happening. I kept up with Tyler's team, Coach Mensch's team, and I was aware of the Penn College women's growth and the different shifts that were happening over the coming years because of being over at Lycoming. We played them and the different things like that. But it was enticing because obviously, I think if you have a chance to coach your alma mater, I do think there's something to that that is kind of nice. And with what I believe my strengths were, I thought it fit this campus quite well. It's worked out better than I even expected. But I do think that when I heard the job was going to come open, it was the first thing on my mind as soon as it became available.
What's that phone call like when you apply for your first head coaching job and you get the phone call that you're being offered that position?
Well, it's funny because I remember where I was sitting at the time. I was actually I was an eye doctor appointment and I'm sitting there and my phone starts to ring. And it gets to the point because obviously hiring coaches, it's a very long process, right? Because they have to go through the talent pool, different things, da, 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 da. And it's a very nerve-wracking time, especially when, I mean, I was an assistant, so I wasn't making a lot of money. And you see this as an opportunity where you become a finalist and they bring you on campus and you go through the thing. And the further down the line you get, the more you visualize it. I think that's any job, anytime you are trying to do something, right away you say, okay, it's a pipe dream. You have the phone call, you have the Zoom, you're on campus, you meet the players. Well, now my brain is going to tell me, hey, I have a chance. I'm one of the last 3, 4, 5 people here in this position. So I think I was sitting at the eye doctor and I saw my phone ring. And at first it was, okay, is this good or bad? And that moment seems to really freeze because it says, okay, this phone call is either going to be the best thing that's ever happened to me or I need to go back to the drawing board and find another part-time job, right? Like it's kind of one of those things. But then you answer the phone and they say, hey, we'd like you to be the new women's soccer coach at Penn College. And the moment is, it's pretty special because I think there is a level of validation you get because the coaching, this is going to sound ridiculous because we work in athletics and there are a lot of good things about it, but it can be kind of a grind sometimes, especially as you're getting your career started. You don't make a ton of money. And so you do it based off of passion and you hope that there's an end goal in sight where you can get there and you can live comfortably and do the different stuff. It's one of those things that it just felt like I'd finally made it. You finally got the opportunity, all the hours I've been putting in, all the things I've been doing, the camps I've been working, the connections I've been making, all these things are great. And someone sees my talent and thinks that I can do a good job. And that's one of the most rewarding things because I started coaching at, I mean, if we just look at my head coaching and assistant coaching career, I was 24 and it was, I mean, I got the job here when I was 28, 29. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that it just feels like a long time. I know it doesn't, when you say, hey, 4 or 5 years, it's not long. It feels like a long time because you never know when another job's going to come up. If you don't get this one, well, am I going to have to relocate? Am I going to have to change my lifestyle? Am I going to have to make new groups of friends? So the good thing is I didn't have to move far from where I was working in terms of the assistant coach, but also I'm in a place that I'm comfortable with and I spent my college years and I really, really enjoy the area. And so from that perspective, it was relief there's a lot of relief in that because it finally feels like someone sees my value and I want to do right by them.
Yeah. It's always on the other end of that call. It's always the, it's probably one of the top five things to make that, to be able to be in a position to make that call, assuming that that's the reaction of the person on the other end. And then obviously the tougher side is making the other calls always a little tougher, but it's great. It's great making that, those calls, because you do know that you are changing someone's lives and someone's changing their lives for you. And both of those things are really unique and interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's another thing that makes these particular jobs so special, because at the same time, you don't jump around. Like, you could go and work at one place and work at another, but people don't move around that often. Usually when you're somewhere, you stay for an extended period, and then maybe you go somewhere else because of a different opportunity. Maybe you change divisions. Do you go D3, D2? Obviously, as you get up higher the ranks, you could see it the opposite way. Do you want to leave for proximity to a location or different stuff? But there is something to knowing that I knew my first coaching job was going to be, I want to build something. And it was a good time here because the program itself, from the PSUAC era all the way to the early NCAA Division III era, has always had promise. There's always been signs where teams have gone to finals or made runs in playoffs or had good records and had great players. But it felt like there was still more to tap into that. And I think for me, that's always an enticing thing, because I tell recruits all the time, you can go a lot of places and win, but what kind of culture can you build at a school is kind of what differentiates Penn College. I said this before, it's something about here, you get a very particular type of person, blue collar, hardworking, different type of mentality that our school offers. And it makes it a really good place to coach.
Let's rewind 3 years, first year of coaching. What were some of the challenges that you faced early on as a first-time head coach?
Well, I think the first thing is, so when I took over, the roster had, it been with everything that kind of happened over the previous few years, there was a big senior class that had left, and it kind of left us in a position where maybe we didn't have as many players as I would have liked coming in. So we came in for my first spring. So I got hired in February. The spring season hit pretty much as soon as I got on campus. We got into that position and I only had about 8 players. Only 6 of them made it to that upcoming fall. So the first thing for me was, we need to stabilize. We need to stabilize. I know the team the year past had some injury issues and had struggled to keep a consistent 11 on the field all the time. And I think the big thing was, okay, I need to bring in as many players as I can. As many players as I possibly can. The problem is, on the women's side, there are a lot of women's athletes that get their decisions done very, very early. And with that in mind, I was kind of behind the eight ball. Fortunately, there were a few players that were already looking. There were 1 or 2 players already committed. And so it was good for me because I had the opportunity to build a connection with the core players that ended up being so instrumental in that first year. Players like Cassie Johnson, who this year had an amazing year, and she's been my captain since I've got on campus. Billie Jean Hennessy, who graduated a year earlier because of her degree and different stuff like that. Nicole Lichtinger, my goalkeeper, who had, after Taylor Gonzalez had got injured, had pretty much become a stalwart in the goal for us for 4 years. Shannon O'Day, players like that really stood out, and they were able to put themselves in a position. And that's not even mentioning a player like Kaylin Sheets, who ended up only scoring 4 goals her first year and then scoring 45 for 2 years for me. It allowed me to build a connection with those players, which is something I really value, because I think if I build a connection with players, I think they'll do better. I think they play better. I think they play harder. There's a better understanding. And that was the benefit of having a small team. But obviously the first challenge was, I need a roster, because the one thing I didn't want was, okay, we got 3 injuries. Now we're playing with 9 players. So I really hit the recruiting trail hard, did what I could do, but recruiting is kind of an every year thing. So once that was done, it was, we need to set the standard. The standard doesn't have to be that we're going to win 20 games out of 20, but it can be, we have to progress. We have to get better every single day. And the most important thing for me was always progress and giving them short-term goals. So one thing that I found that really works with my team is, all right, we want to get to the victory. Victory is the ultimate goal. We want to win. But in order to do that, we can't just win. You don't just go out and win. You have to have the shots, play the certain style, defend in a certain way, do those different things. And that was what we really used that spring and my first fall to do. And so a big part of that was culture build. And the good thing is, because we ingrained the culture in the incoming freshmen and with the returning players so much, that now it kind of builds itself. Like, now when I have new players coming in, it's funny, you'll hear some of my upperclassmen, they'll say I'm softer now because I was so hard on them when I came in, because it was building. I had to set the standard. This is not good enough. We need to do better here. We need to do that. Now they do it on their own. the girls will police themselves. And that was what was important. And that is what is important to, it's what I find the most important thing. Because if you can have everyone pulling the same direction, you can have a lesser team and beat better teams. And it's something we've done really, really well. When we go into games as underdogs, we do really well.
Yeah, this is a good segue into our next segment, which is philosophy and team culture. You mentioned a little bit of what you expect from your team. Describe for us what your philosophy is and what your culture is. And maybe elaborate too on, now it's kind of it's self-sustaining a culture. It's the students maintaining that and how and when did you get to that point?
It's really funny because someone mentioned it to me the other day when they were in my office. They say it's the team has, and I appreciate this, they have such a belief in the things that I say. They know that I don't go into things and say, he's just saying this because of this reason or that reason. The first thing is, and we've always said this, no player that ever comes into this team will be bigger than the team. Every player is held to the same standard, whether it's my player of the year, freshman Meg Currian, or is it my last player on the bench. Every player is held to the exact same standard. Cassie Johnson has been a stalwart in our team for years, and her and I always laugh about this one. Our first home game, I asked her something on the field, and she raised her hands at me. She was the undoubted best player on our team at that time, and I told her, if she ever raises her hands at me again during a game when I just give her an instruction, she'll never play again. And from that moment, her and I will laugh about it now because she understands. She knows that was what it was. I can't have my best players yelling at me because then players underneath them think that's okay, or they think that they get preferential treatment. And that's not how it works. Nobody's bigger than the badge. Nobody's bigger than the team. Penn College, they're all Penn College women's soccer players. And they know that. And they bought into that. And the way you cultivate that is you show them why it's important. And with that comes a level of accountability, right? Accountability in every person is the most important thing. When I make a mistake as a coach, I will own it to the girls. So my first year, we went to Geneva. I made a tactical change and we ended up losing. It's my fault. And so the first thing I said when we came off, the girls had worked their socks off the entire time. They were gassed and they were really down. I said, hey, this is on me. This one's my fault. I made a tactical change because I thought it would help us. It didn't work. But I do that because when I make a mistake, I want them to understand, oh, he owns it. So when they make mistakes, they do the same. That's huge. Because it's okay to make mistakes in a team. It's okay to miss passes. It's okay to not score goals. It's okay to lose games. But it's the way you rebound from that. Hey, I could do better next time. I'll look for this pass. I'll do this. I'll do that. That's what's important. And that goes into this whole thing of the team is the team. The team is what we are collectively. You have great players within that, but every player is held to the same standard. The expectation might be different. Your expectations and my expectations as players might be different because we have different skill sets. But the standard for everyone is you will conduct yourself in this way. You will do this thing. This is how we operate. That's a Penn College ideal. And it's kind of funny because some players will come into my office when they don't think players are meeting those levels. And they'll say, hey, coach, we need to bring this person in. We need to talk to him about this. And that's when you know you did it right. That I think I noticed at the end of last season because it was brought to my attention by one of my players. And they had said, it's so funny. As soon as I, as a coach, get annoyed with the way that somebody has kind of reacted to either their position in the team or based off of things that might have happened and maybe their reaction to a situation isn't what I consider ideal with the team, my players feel it. And they will then self-police and say, hey, you need to do better. You need to do this. You need to do that. That to me is how I know what we're doing is right. Because every player knows if we pull the same direction, we can reach the summit together. And that I think is what success is for me because wins usually follow.
From my vantage point of view, cultivating that culture is your office. Talk a little bit about the atmosphere in your office. You've set it up to be this funhouse candy store, open, closed door, whatever it needs to be. It is the energy of the department. It is constantly in motion. And on the very few days that you are not in, there are wayward women's soccer players searching for their coach. Talk about that part of the culture that you established.
So in my recruiting process, I tell recruits that the minute you step on campus, you become one of my girls. And I always look out for my girls. Anything you need, you can have. If you need to FaceTime me at 11 o'clock at night because something happened or because you got a bad test score or because you're confused and you need some help with something, I'll always answer it. And my office is an extension of that. I like it to be a place where people can feel comfortable. In those walls, there's no judgment. You may not like the advice I give you, but you can come in and say whatever you want. You can tell me that you can be soccer field related. It can be school related. It can be personal life related. Whatever you need, you can have. I have varied levels of relationship with every player. Not every player comes in and tells me their deepest, darkest secret or thing that's something that's bothering them. Some people just come in because maybe they had a bad day. and they just want to laugh, or they want to grab a bag of goldfish or a little thing of Nerds, right? Like, it's whatever you want it to be. And so the way I look at it is, when you get on campus, you might be 4 hours from home. You might be 10 minutes from home. We have players as close as Williamsport. We have players that have been here from Long Island. And I think being away from home when you're a senior going to be a freshman, I think you think it sounds good, and you don't realize how much of an impact that your family and your mother and father, or grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, best friends, you don't know how big of an impact or how much of a void they fill. You don't realize how often you turn to them for certain things. And I told them, that can be quite harrowing when you first get here. You sit there and you're looking at four walls, and you've had a bad test score. Maybe your significant other and you are having an argument, or because maybe they're from home and maybe there's some distance. Maybe you had a bad practice and now you think that I don't believe in you, because that's a big thing. Come in and talk about it. If that's what you want to talk about, come in and grab a fidget toy, squeeze one of those stress balls, and say what you need to say. It can be a place where you can let off some steam, but it also can be a place where if you just need a laugh, come in and I'll tell you a story, or I'll talk to you. Or there'll be players from my team, there'll be players from Coach Mensch's team, there'll be baseball boys that stop by, there'll be some softball players that stop by. It's just a place that I like to think is very open to anybody. If you want to come in and have a conversation, let's do it. You want to come in and just talk about life, let's do it. But for me, it's probably, going back to the culture building thing, it's the most important thing for me. It's why I try to be in as often as I can. I mean, it can make me tired sometimes, because I show up at sometimes 9 a.m. and don't leave till 9 p.m. But if that's what my girls need, that's what they get. Because I think that they know that I have their best interest at heart. And I think what that does is it allows them to know that when I tell them something on the soccer field, that I'm not just saying it to be a jerk. I'm saying it because we have that relationship. I can be a little bit more forward with you. Hey, that's not good enough, because I know you're capable of better. I think it plays a huge role. It plays a huge role. And I notice that when my team are in the office, it does feel, there's a little bit of levity that comes, and they come in, and some of them will joke with you. They'll stop by your office, Brittany's office, Jordan's office, Scott's office. It's nice. And I think it's good, because I always tell the team, when you're a women's soccer player, everyone knows us, because we're very out. We try to get out in the community. We try to touch base with local soccer teams in the area, youth-wise, otherwise. We try to get involved on campus whenever there's events. So there's a lot of people who know our faces. I say, make sure you carry yourself with some kind of, put a smile on your face. Even if you're having a bad day, say hi to people, stop by, do the different things, share a laugh, because that's my personality. That's how I like it to be. And I think that has kind of shifted onto my girls. They are very social. They are very outgoing. And that's something that my office has been a great place for culture building, because it allows us to take it to the next level.
Yeah, it's always nice when student athletes come through the office. For any team, it creates an energy. And I think for a lot of us, or at least in my perspective, it reminds you of why you're doing this. So it's nice to be reminded of that. And then certainly you have some characters on your team, and even Meg Curran, your freshman, I know when she walks in at this point, because I can hear her ankles before I hear a hello. And I don't even have to necessarily, because my back faces the door, I know it's Meg walking by because I hear it of her ankles. So
I think also it's nice, because my personality is a very certain way, and I like a laugh. I like to joke. Like, I like to have fun. I always tell people, like, some people forgot that working in athletics was supposed to be fun. Mm-hmm. Like, the reason I coach is because I'm too old to play. My knees hurt, my back hurts. You know what I mean? For me, this doesn't have to be super serious. Yeah, we can be serious at times. We can want to win. I would love to go beat St. Mary's. I'd love to beat Harrisburg. I'd love to beat Lancaster Bible. That's cool. But we don't have to do it at the expense of having fun. And I do talk to a lot of players, especially because I keep in contact with recruits afterwards. Like, oh, hey, how you been? Like, how's it going? Especially when I see them at other places. And they're like, well, it's just, I kind of wish that I would have done this or that. And so, that's okay. It's supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be a good time. And in my recruiting process, a lot of times what I will do is, when they get on campus, I already know they're a good player. I'm trying to see, would you fit in with my team? I've actually taken offers away because of the way people have fit in for overnights, or because the way that they wouldn't mesh, and maybe they're more me people than we people, right? Because that's a big thing for me. Do you want to win, or do we want to win? What's the most important thing for you? Because if you want to win, you're not going to fit in here. You're going to have to find out you can win by us winning. And so that's a huge thing for me. I've also taken players that I thought maybe have an upside, but are a little bit below the standard at the time, but have a high potential. I'm not just taking anybody, but I think they can add culture-wise. And that to me is important. And I mean, you have your players like Sierra Klinger and Meg, who are always in my office, really bright personalities, really good soccer players. And you have your players who are more quiet, and that's also okay. But it's nice to have the players that come in and have the conversation. Like, we always joke with Meg about the way she eats bananas and all the different stuff, right? There are these funny stories that you and I specifically would have that just because of the way the relationship we have with these girls and the things that any athlete, when they come in, it's fun. Because you develop a relationship with them on a different level other than just, you're my left back, you're my right back, you're my striker. No, tell me a story about your mom and dad. How's your family doing? How's this? How's that? And it's, for me, I love the success, but I look forward to getting the invite to their wedding versus all these things we're doing here.
And for the record, I think you shared this on the Tomorrow Makers podcast, but for those that didn't hear it, Meg Caron eats her banana by peeling off till the meat of the banana is visible. And then she puts her finger in the banana, which splits it into thirds. Ian, when you first saw that, how concerned were you?
I think disturbed would be the perfect way to feel. I mean, that was a good description by you, but I'm going to make it easier. Picture the weirdest way that anyone's ever eaten a banana. Now, whatever you're picturing, it's probably still not as weird as this, but I mean, the girl scores goals. And so if that's what she wants to do, by all means, I'm sure she has some other weird quirky things. But I mean, I was on the bus and I turned around and all of a sudden I see a banana split into three, almost looked like a claw machine, you know what I mean? So she's just peeling pieces of this banana off and eating it. And at first I looked at Morgan, who sits behind me, and we were very, very, very confused.
Was Morgan cross-stitching?
Yes, of course she is. She was actually making blankets for our seniors, for senior day. Morgan was, she was doing crocheting on the bus. Yeah, she was crocheting on the bus. So yeah, the bus is an interesting place. But once again, it's kind of like an extension of the office. The bus, because bus culture is also locker room culture. It's the same thing you get when you're in a locker room. You have a lot of people connecting on certain things, and maybe they might be sitting across from people they don't usually hang out with, or they might be seat buddies. That's one thing I like about my team, that classes are intertwined. Everyone is friends with everybody. I've never seen anything like it. It's a really good place. And I'll look down a bus and go, that's a weird pairing. But it's stuff like that. And then we can all laugh at people like Meg when they do weird stuff like that.
Let's rewind just 3 years to break up some of these segments. Sometimes when NFL players are interviewing, they talk about a welcome to NFL moment. It's usually a big hit or a touchdown where it's like, oh my goodness, I'm a professional football player. For you, what is your welcome to head coaching moment? What was that moment where you're like, oh, I am head coach?
I have to think about the Kings game. So my first year we played against Kings and we hosted them here, and it was a big moment because it's the first time at the college level where I had run my own pregame. That wasn't a scrimmage. That wasn't like, it was a, this game counts. It's going to go down in the record books of the NCAA as an existing match. And in that game, we had gone down by a goal. We had come back to 2-1 and then ended up losing 3-2. During that time, Sarah Darlington, or Vlad, as we call her, had gone down with cramp. Cassie Johnson was overhydrated and it upset her stomach and had to come out of the game. Mind you, I only had about 18 players at this time, and two of my best players came off the field. And I, at one point, looked at my assistant coach, Jacob LeMay, and just said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do anymore. It was kind of like a weird moment because you plan everything, right? This is what we're going to do on corners. This is what we're going to do on set pieces. How we're going to do throw-ins. This is our tactic. Here's the style of play we're going to have. All these different things. And then you get there and you go down a goal early. You find a way to go up and lose two of your best players. And it's like, what the heck am I supposed to do? Because I've been in the situation, but this is now a new level. Everybody on the other team has been recruited by someone. Everyone on our team has mostly been recruited by me or the previous coaches. And so that was a big moment for me because it almost felt like it was like a helpless moment. Because like, all right, well, this is the situation, right? I don't have a huge roster. We run the gauntlet. Okay, we gave up an early goal, but then we were able to battle back, which showed good character, but then we blew the lead and then ended up losing. So it kind of ran the whole thing. And so that was a big moment. I think about it all the time. And it's one thing that myself and Jake reflect on. We oftentimes reflect on that first year because then it allows us to ground ourselves when we're bummed out with this current team. Like if maybe we don't have a good practice. Well, 3 years ago, that was our team. And the standard was way way less. No offense to the players that were there. It's just our team has progressed. That's how it should be. We've gotten better every single year. Players have gotten better. Our recruits have gotten better. These things are great. And so we look at that and we say, it was crazy that we were even 2-1 up against Kings at the time, who were a decent team. But it was a moment that I kind of looked down the sideline for options. And I didn't feel like I had a good one. And so for me, it was like, I guess this is what's going to happen. This is what it's like to be a college coach and not necessarily have all the answers all the time.
Do you have a favorite game in your head coaching career to this point?
I think for me, this one is another one that I reflect on quite often. And it's very clear to me. It's the moment that I realized we were a team that could do something. We traveled away to St. Mary's. We had to do an overnight the night before because there was a hurricane coming through. We got moved from their grass field to their turf field. It was a stressful day. During that day, we ended up missing our captain, all-conference center back, Billie Jean Hennessy. She had to stay behind because of radiography clinicals. She wasn't able to travel. And then we had Cassie Johnson out, who was one of our best players at the time, captain, leader of the team, with a hamstring injury, and she had missed the two games preceding that. Going there, St. Mary's had just had a strong year the year before. Going away to them, missing two of our best players when our roster was already so limited, was quite daunting. But we scored 3 goals early. Bang, bang, bang. I think Kaylin Sheets scored, Wiley scored. I think Sheets might have scored twice. And they ended up scoring right at halftime to make it 3-1. They scored right in the beginning of the second half. And Jake and I kind of look at each other, okay, here it comes, right? We don't really have a ton of answers on the sideline. We don't really know. But we battled through. We ended up winning 3-2, which all but clinched us a playoff spot that year. And playoffs was a pipe dream. It was only 4 teams and see what's going to happen. That was huge. For the growth of the program, it was massive because it told me what we're doing is right. Even if we don't necessarily have all of our best players every given game, we can still do it. These players are willing to do whatever they're asked. We had one of my players, Liv Casella, played in the center back for the first time of the season. She had never played there before, and she played 90 minutes there and helped us get a huge win that, for me, was the starting point for what we ended up doing, winning 11 games the next year and now winning 15 games this year. It will always be the most influential moment of my time here, no matter what I do. If we win a conference title, that's great, but it will all come down to the fact that we went to St. Mary's away and got a result without two of our best players. That shows character. That shows strength. That shows grit. It shows exactly what our ideals are as a team. And so it's funny because I have the picture in my phone that athletic director Scott Kennel, he had to text me that day. And I sent him the picture of the girls. And it's still on my phone today. I actually sent it to the team about a month ago. And it was just funny because I hold that photo. That is a snapshot of a time to me. That picture to me is probably my favorite picture of my coaching career. I have 2 pictures that I think of all the time. One was after my first win against Lancaster Bible, where Cassie Johnson took a picture with a few of us. And then there's this one, because the Lancaster Bible was a big win. This was the biggest one of my career.
When you sent that picture back, was the response, was it a thumbs up emoji?
I can almost guarantee it was. I can almost guarantee that it was a thumbs up emoji.
All right, we talked about favorite game. The second question is favorite moment. You had just recently said that's your favorite moment. I think the feeling is what you're talking about of that St. Mary's win. So favorite moment, not game related so far in your coaching career. Do you have that?
Honestly, I think the one thing to me, and it's less about what the achievement was and more about the actual feeling itself. So this past year, we were able to complete the undefeated regular season. That to me was not about the undefeated season, but it was the whole season would be, okay, we probably could lose this game. Then we would win or we would draw. Okay, well, now this is our next hurdle. And we got to a point where you only have 3 or 4 games left and you're looking at the schedule knowing that, hey, we could beat this team, should beat this team, and this game's gonna be tough, but we can definitely have a chance. That to me was huge because I could feel the team. The closer we got, the more they wanted it. Because you don't often have times that you get to complete an undefeated regular season, right? It just doesn't really happen because you come across a team that's very strong. Like we played St. Vincent and we had a tough game against Elmira. And we have these games that could be huge stumbling blocks where you could lose 1-0, you could lose 2-1 off a set piece or off a penalty or any different things. You can drop results very easily. And the closer we got, you can almost feel the tension building. You can feel the tension building. Okay, now we're playing Rosemont and Brynathyn and different things like that. And you start to worry. And the pride that the team felt in doing it, because it was something we would never have thought about. But when you are 12-0-4 and you're 2 games away, well, now you want it. Now you want it. And so it's less about the wins and the losses. It's about the moment we shared, because when you talk about pictures, it just so happened that we had a photographer at the game and a videographer at the game. And so we were able to capture that moment. And the picture, it's actually on my wall in my office of the team. It's incredible. It was just an incredible moment for the program, because we'd gone from a team that, hey, we were 9-8-1, then we lost in playoffs. Okay, now we were 11-1 and 2-7 or something like that. And then we were 14-0-4. That's crazy. It's crazy, the progress. It's just looking at where the team started, and it's looking at where the team was and the pride that they felt in that moment. And so for me, although it's great to say, oh my gosh, undefeated team, I don't think about that. I think about the achievement of the overall and the things people sacrifice throughout the season to play in these games and go to these games, missing classes and different stuff. That is a huge moment for us collectively.
Yeah. It was a great season. What advice do you have to high school players, one in general, but then to high school players that want to pursue college soccer, specifically at Penn College?
Be you. Most important thing is be yourself. I get a lot of emails, because the problem is, as people become more and more interested in pursuing athletics, right? I mean, a lot of kids now go through recruiting exercises and they go through actual recruiters who help them craft emails. Be authentic. Early on, I don't mind it, right? If you want to send me a blast email, because I do it too. I say, hey, I'm going to be at this tournament. If you're interested, let me know. I'll give you more info, right? I'll send out a larger email to say, do you want to be in one of these 15 majors, which is typically what our school thrives in. I like to narrow my scope so that I don't waste time, because a lot of my recruiting is based off relationship building. So I spend a lot of time calling recruits, texting recruits, having them on campus, setting up visits, bringing them up to our prospect days. I spend a lot of time. I stop trying to recruit a lot of players, and I recruit. If I want 6 players, I offer 10. And those 10 are based off of personality, ability, and fit. You can have a great personality and be a slightly lesser player and be a great fit for this team. That will get you recruited by me. You could be a great player with an awful personality and not a good fit for our team. I don't want you. I say, once again, me people over we people. Always be a we. One of my big questions is, you step onto the sideline for the first game and I don't put you in. How are you reacting? And if your reaction is, I'm disappointed, that's fine, because competitors should be disappointed, because I want to play. The only reason I play sports is because I want to get on the field. But if you give me any other answer other than that, it's probably not a good fit, right? Because as our team grows, that's going to become few and far between. Be yourself, because coaches are looking to see how you fit in. I'm specifically looking to see how you fit in. And a lot of times for visits, I will have 5, 6, 7 of my players who will join us throughout the tour. And they'll have a chance to meet my girls, see my ideals personally, but also on top of that, to see if they mesh with the team. Because I know ability. I can see it. That's good. So can you. Everyone can see a good soccer player. But are you going to fit in when it comes? And that's why if you're an inauthentic version of yourself, you're doing yourself a disservice, because you should also be looking for the right fit for you. And I always say, your life is more important than my soccer team. Some people might think I'm weird. Some people might think I'm great. It could be anywhere in between. But at least if you give me the authentic version of yourself and I give you the authentic version of myself, when we come together and we're together for 4 years, it's going to be the best 4 years of your life, because what we do here is very different from a lot of places. You can go a lot of places and win, but you can't go a lot of places and have the culture that we have and the success that we have. That's something that sets us apart. So if you want to come here, or if you want to go anywhere, always be authentic. Always be authentic and try to do your best to differentiate yourself and be a real person.
All right. Coach, where can fans of Penn College women's soccer follow the journey of your team?
I think for us, the biggest thing is look us up on Instagram, because we do a lot of things with videographers and we do a lot of things with putting photos out there and trying to stay connected. That is at PCT Women's Soccer, or it'd be PCTWSOCCER. And you could check us out there. Also check out our website and see if we're around in terms of where we're going for games, because one thing we try to do is get out to different areas to either connect with alumni or to just to spread it out for our players so they can see and experience different things. So most important thing is you can always watch us online on our live stream. So we'd appreciate any support you can give us.
Right. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you to everybody tuning in. Stay wild.